The Madonna of Bolton, written by Matt Kane and read by Simon Voss.
Part 1. Lucky Star. My love story begins during a time when little boys want to grow up to be Michael Jackson and little girls want to be just like Princess Diana. I'm at an age when the most important thing in life is remembering my Green Cross code, never trusting strangers, and making it through the mental arithmetic test my teacher sets every Friday. Because, as she's so fond of saying, when we're grown-ups, we won't be able to carry a calculator around all the time. It's my 9th birthday, and we're having a special tea to celebrate. Only my close family are there, as we're having it at home in our box-shaped 1960s pebble-semi in a suburb of Bolton. I sit at the kitchen table with Mum, Dad, Grandma and my brother Joe and can feel the happiness warming me up from within as Mum leans over to light the candles on my cake. She's made me a Victoria sandwich with my name iced on the top in big letters, Charlie. She's particularly proud of it as baking isn't her forte and she's never attempted anything as complicated as piping a name onto a cake before, even if she has misjudged the spacing so that the I and the E are both squashed up at the edge. I don't care, though, because I know how hard she must have tried. "What do you think, love?" she asks brightly. "I love it, Mum," I chirp. "It's the best cake I've ever had." Her face breaks into a broad grin, and as she finishes lighting the candles, I notice that she's being careful to keep her hair tucked away from the matches. Although I've always thought my mum's pretty, there's one thing that really makes her stand out from the crowd. Her naturally blonde hair. It's something she spends a lot of money looking after and a lot of time talking about. I've lost track of the number of occasions I've overheard her asking her friends if they think its exact shade is closer to baby, honey, or California blonde. She never tires of telling me and Joe that we don't know how lucky we are to have hit the jackpot by inheriting her hair colour, something she always refers to as her trump card. Although I wasted it on your dad, she'll sometimes add, if dad's an earshot and has done something to annoy her. I threw it all away on a man who doesn't appreciate it. If dad doesn't immediately rise to the bait, Mum will go on to tell him about a handsome customer she served at work in Bolton Market Hall, who's told her she looks like Farrah Fawcett in Charlie's Angels or Goldie Hawn in Private Benjamin. "Maggie, you work on a women's underwear stall," dad'll pipe back at her, "so I won't get too excited about some bloke who comes in to buy frilly knickers." At this point, Mum usually huffs loudly and tells Dad that it's always nice to be complimented, after which he'll reassure her that she's a belting-looking woman and whatever he's done will be promptly forgiven. I guess it's fair to say my dad isn't what you'd call romantic. In fact, he's fond of describing himself as a man's man, which for some reason he thinks excuses him from any effort at romance. He's bald, with a thick brown moustache and muscles that strain at his shirt sleeves. His job involves lifting around heavy loads all day as he delivers lard and cooking fat to chip shops and food vans all over Bolton. When he comes home from work at 5 o'clock in the evening, he sometimes makes me and Joe laugh by flexing his muscles, kissing them and saying, "Eat your heart out, Popeye!" Right now, Dad stands up from the kitchen table to turn the lights out so that everyone can sing Happy Birthday. As I listen with glee, my feet jiggling away under the table, I try to decide what to wish for. The problem is there are far too many things I want. I'm very pleased when I eventually work out how to narrow everything down to just one wish, to get loads and loads of presents. And then I blow out all 9 candles. "Hooray!" everyone choruses. "Hip hip hooray!" After we've demolished the cake, we go through to the front room so that I can unwrap my presents. The main living space of our home has a heavily patterned shag carpet, walls that are painted bright orange and a stripy purple 3-piece suite. Even though we're a good few years into the 1980s, in Bolton, the new decade is only just beginning, and the 1970s still clung on to most areas of life, especially interior design. In front of the fire stands an enormous Bell's whiskey bottle that's been emptied of booze and is now filled with so much of Mum and Dad's loose change that it reminds me of a pirate's treasure chest. And finishing off the room are several of Mum's much-loved houseplants, including a huge cheese plant and an overgrown ivy that trails around the skirting boards on all 4 walls. At the moment, however, our front room is dominated by a massive stack of presents that stand piled up in the centre.